it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Steve Rosenbloom.
We suck, so your self-quarantine doesn't have to.
Mark Grody.
I think there will be lasting derivatives of this once we get through it, and hopefully we will, with minimal damage, that people will be more aware, honestly, of washing their hands and
good thing.
And apparently wiping. Apparently wiping.
They suck, so you don't have to.
They can do what they have to do. They know what they have to do. Now they don't have any problem getting it done.
Founding members of the WB Club.
Wake and bake. Come on.
Where's Toby?
So I'm practicing, you know, social distancing, and I have a few tips for everybody, you know. You know, no sharing pipes or joints, things like that.
The three words that describe this show, and I quote,
stink, stank, stunk.
It's Saturday suckage on the Score.
We should be 670 WSUK. Welcome in. Saturday Suckage, the Wake and Bake Club, all rolled into one. You should pardon the phrase. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Grody with you. Oh, hi, Mark. How are you, Mark?
Steve, I'm doing well. There's really no better way to start the show than to correct an error that I made on Twitter. And I think that is
welcome
apropos.
To Saturday Suckage, everyone.
I had put on Twitter that Eloy Jimenez would be playing left field in his rehab start today. He is not. Eloy will be the designated hitter, but I was close. Tomorrow he is scheduled to play left field. So it's really the same concept. He will be playing defense in his rehab starts, or at least one of them, for the Chicago White Sox.
No. No, stop it. So that means the White Sox still have time to stop the stupid, right? They still
have, they have 24 hours. 24 hours or Mother Nature. Maybe it'll rain. They don't want to play it on a sloppy field.
They were rained out yesterday, so.
There is that. So if there are any obstacles, well, actually the wall counts as an obstacle. For Eloy. How about this? Remove the wall and any netting that might exist at that ballpark. Give him every chance to succeed, as we say. Pat him up. Put him in a football gear.
So the only thing he's capable of playing left field in is the Field of Dreams game where he can run into the corn stalks. Is that
there
it?
You go.
Or would he
and,
find
but
a
there
way
might
to
be wild.
Himself?
There could be wild animals in the corn.
You can't
know.
Just run blindly through corn stalks too. I mean, you got to know. You got to pay attention a little bit.
You get lost in those too, right?
Like, yeah, exactly.
Eloy could go in there and he could never be found again. I as a kid,
that's
I used
where
to
they should
run
throw his
corn
glove.
Fields.
That's yeah, where right. they should throw
that,
his glove.
There you go.
Drop Steve. It in the middle of a cornfield and say, if you can find it, you can play left field today.
No, but then he loses bad. You can't have him wandering around like that.
You put a time limit on it and put like a track. Use his cell phone to track him or something. And just send him in there for a couple hours and say, if you can't find it in 2 hours, you're not playing the field today.
I just don't understand why they would do this. They're humoring the player, but the player obviously is too stupid to take care. This is or they're using this as the Sox are saying, okay, show us you're smarter than you were in a spring training game when you got hurt and you cost us your bat for half a season. Right? Isn't this what they're humoring him? They're letting the player try to show that he could stay healthy.
That's possible, and I think there's a caveat to go with it. I'm going to go under the assumption that they have sat down with him, whether it's Rick Hahn or anybody at the minor league instruction level, and said, we're going to put you out there, but got a few rules for you. You know, no, there'll be no going for balls up against the wall. You know, allow your center fielder to be the captain out there. And they probably have to talk to the center fielder, too, and say, hey, here's what's going on. We're going to need you to kind of babysit our left fielder. So there, hopefully there is that. And then what could possibly be the other reason other than humoring him, which I do think is a possibility. The other one is the Sox are just kind of desperate for guys to rotate throughout the outfield at this point, that they might need his glove at times. You know, that'd be my guess. Like, there's no way they're going to just put – it would be irresponsible to just put Eloy Jimenez in the outfield on an everyday basis, but you could see a scenario where he gets sporadic every other day play out there.
And I will say, guys, I haven't had time to actually pull this audio yet, but – Ryan Newman, when he was on with the Inside the Clubhouse guys, you know, at 45 minutes ago, he did say that he will remind Eloy when he's playing the field, like, hey, you know, don't, like, be overly aggressive out there. And he also said, like, he's pretty sure the White Sox have told him. He's like made it sound like there's multiple messages being sent to Eloy that say, hey, don't be a hero out there. And, you know, we need your bat more than we need your glove.
Okay, Trash Panda. So Ryan Newman is manager, Winston Salem, right? The Dash.
Yes.
So Ryan Newman's not the manager. He's like the assistant GM. Oh, no. You're right. My bad.
Well, he's the guy in charge of talking to Inside the Clubhouse, Bruce Levine and David Haw. And that's what he told them. And here's the problem. If you really, what Ryan Newman told Inside the Clubhouse, what he said, the White Sox said, what they told Eloy, don't you realize there's a problem if you have to go to all these lengths to tell the guy, don't play left field, and then you put him out in left field, then you're the idiot organization. You are begging for an injury. Because one part of me doesn't blame Eloy Jimenez or any player. If you put him out there, they're going to try. They have to try. That's one of the things that got them to the point where they're in the major leagues, or they are on the verge of getting the major leagues. That's what they're supposed to do. And then you put them out there and say, don't. You're an idiot organization for doing that. I just think that's counterproductive. And how many times have we heard managers and coaches in any sport, every sport, say, if you have to think, you're dead. And you run the risk. Once you hesitate, you run the risk of greater injury out there. Because you're thinking, you're running, you're not aware of every surrounding. You're not taking your cues from what's around you. I just think this is a crazy thing for them to do. And I'd rather have him hurt feelings than hurt body parts. If they tell him, no, you're not going to play. We're not giving you love. Have a seat. Learn to bat. And the only other thing I would suggest is bring in, as a outfield coach, Alfonso Soriano. He's the guy.
Why?
He knows the guy. He knows the way to run away from danger, right? He stayed healthy in Wrigley
Field.
That's
true. That's a good. Okay, I got where you're coming from. Right.
Like,
he was always just sort of jaking it out there. You know, I was thinking too. Yeah. How important? Well, I guess the designated hitter probably could return to Major League Baseball for both leagues next year. But how useless would Eloy Jimenez have been with the Chicago Cubs? I mean, could you imagine that conundrum? Like, if the Cubs had to play him every day in left field and try to make that happen? I mean, I'm sure they would probably welcome the conflict at this point, but that would have been gotten very interesting. You know, Schwarber is serviceable as an outfielder, but I don't know that Eloy Jimenez is ever going to get to that level of serviceable.
No, but Schwarber came from a position where whatever you thought of his ability to catch, he came from a legitimate position. There's been no threat that anything about Eloy Jimenez's outfielding was legitimate. It was never going to be major league level. It never will be. I don't believe for a moment it would be. I believed more in Schwarber because he had already established himself in a position. I don't believe Eloy showed me anything that he was established anywhere. And
I don't know. What was Schwarber legit? Apparently not. I mean, I know what you're saying. He was a catcher at Indiana, but there didn't seem to be a whole lot of time at the major league level where anybody in the Cubs organization thought that Kyle Schwarber was a legitimate catcher. I think they're both hitters. They are hitters. That is why Kyle Schwarber and Eloy Jimenez are going to both have long and careers at the major league level and make a lot of money, not because of their defense.
He's Mark Grody. I'm Steve Rosenblum. We are Saturday Suckers, the WB Club, the Wake and Bake Club. We'll have to induct a new member. Sounds like Jed Hoyer wants to join our club. The Tech Zone is alive. The Tech Zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at rosenhyundai.com. The number is 312-644-6767. It's also the same number not to call us. I mean, we welcome phone calls. We just never get any except from Toby, the president emeritus of the Lick and Bake Club.
It depends if Trash Panda opens the phone lines. If he X's them all out, then we get nothing. But so when we don't, we just don't know. We don't know what kind of stuff.
So wait, if Toby's
on.
President emeritus, who's currently president?
Well, Jed Hoyer is running for the office when he says this is certainly not a rebuild. Oh, really? You already quit on the season when poverty-stricken Tom Ricketts told you to get rid of Yu Darvish's contract along with Victor Caratini, so you quit on the season. So how is this not going to be a rebuild if everybody's up for sale?
Rebuild is a dirty word that owners don't allow their GMs to use. That's my opinion.
But it is a rebuild.
It is. You're right.
I mean, how could it not be? I mean, explain to me how it's not. Your guy, Jed Hoyer, explain to me how it's not.
I think what he should say is it is a rebuild, but we don't plan on losing 100 games. Maybe something like that, because I think that if Cubs fans hear the word rebuild, to them that might connote what happened back in the years leading up to 2015, the 2013, 14, even before that, where it was Nate Shearholz and the Chicago Cubs, and it was just... I don't know why he's always my go-to
All-star Brian LaHare at the Chicago...
Oh, my God. Hey, there's Mike Holt. He's better than Chris Bryant.
Oops. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, the whole Brian thing brings up something. I don't know why Javi Baez is not on the White Sox now. I don't know why that isn't the case, but... Jed Hoyer was clearly making sure everybody knew he was open for business, and he's doing everything he can to be the first one to start a bidding war. That's what was going on, but it just didn't make sense to say this is not a rebuild. Because what are you selling? Let's play this out. If you're not a rebuild, what are you doing? If it's not, everybody might be traded. Right? The whole 11-game losing streak, except if you're Ted Phillips, the 11-game losing streak would mean that the Cubs are going to win the Super Bowl, because that's the way the idiot Bears think. But if that changed everything, then why wouldn't it be a rebuild? Why wouldn't you, if everybody's up for sale, if you're holding the Wrigley Field yard sale, why isn't this a rebuild? And by the way, the rebuild did work once.
It did work. And, let's see what happens. Let's see if Jed Hoyer trades, let's just say even two of the core pieces, then you circle back and ask the question again. All right, is this a rebuild? Unless you're getting back everyday major league players somehow. But if he gets, top or... top 10-ish type prospects, then I think we could all, reporters could probably circle back and say, all right, Jed, now here's your team, and here's what's left. Is this a rebuild? What's going to happen? Yeah, what do you think? I think the better question is once it's all said and done, hey, Jed, what do you think next year is going to be like? And hear how he answers that question. Like, if he's got nothing left, none of the big core pieces, or at least a couple of them are gone. Hey, Jed, what do you expect out of next year? And listen very carefully as to how he answers that question.
Well, you could go Chapman. I mean, that has been brought up in the discussions this week. If you trade Bryant and Baez, they'll be free agents. You can re-sign them. So what you do is you lose 2 months of them in a season you've already killed off. And then you get the chance to re-sign them. You get whatever you get in trade, but if the Darvish deal, the Darvish Caratini deal, is any example, I mean, it looks, you get players who probably still have to go through driver's training. Who knows when or if they'll ever show up. So you're going to get maybe a handful of magic beans. I don't know. I'm just saying that's, but the one thing you might get back is those players plus some restocking of the farm system. You know what? Let's figure out somebody who might be smarter than us. A man we've not heard from for a while, but a man who texted me the other night and said, "This is what happens with Scarietta."
Is this person deluxe by any chance?
He is a deluxe writer. He's a deluxe guest, and we have to break to make sure that our deluxe. No, Tony's next. I thought it was 11:20. No, Tony. All right, he's next.
All right, now we're gonna have Tony's to check. Well, let's check my work here, Tony. Okay, so let me see here. Tony is good for 11:20. Yeah, there you go.
All right, so Gonzo's at 12:20. He's our deluxe guest. Tony's still deluxe. We'll get to him. We need to take Saturday suckage roll, don't we? Don't we need to take Saturday suckage roll? Is Mike Tomlin here? Mike Tomlin.
Oh yeah.
Tom.
Who else?
Tom.
Who else?
Sucking.
Yeah. Grobber. Grobber.
It sucks. Grobber. And it freebases.
Brian Cashman. Is
I also know that we suck right now.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, look at you guys.
Jake, the aforementioned Jake Arrieta, new member.
This sucks. Really, it does.
Yeah, there you go. And old friend, Albert Almora.
Damn, Willie, man, like, do we suck?
Yeah, there we go. Thank you very much.
Look at you two, man. For look the at Saturday that. Look what you guys put together. That is
experience.
Good.
And a 773 texter. This is just lovely. Eloy might get impaled on an ear of corn. Yes, he might. All right. So, Field of Screams, that's where when Eloy goes out there, that's what's going to happen. We'll talk with Tony Andracchi about the not rebuilding but sucking Cubs. We'll see how he parses this thing. He's Mark Grody. I'm Steve Rosenblum. This is Saturday Suckage. We suck so you don't have to. Thanks for listening. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Fans are standing at Wrigley. Here comes the 0-2 on the way. Strike three called. Cubs win the ball game. Edmund caught looking at a backdoor bender. And the Cubs have taken the opener over St. Louis by a score of 10-5.
Highlights courtesy of us. The Score, Pat Hughes, future Hall of Famer, on the call. And the Cubs staying a game ahead in third place. Miles behind the team in front of them. Almost as close to last place as first. There you go. There's your Cubs. But they're not rebuilding. They're not. No. The general manager, the president says they're not rebuilding. Well, that certainly sounds like Saturday suckage. So does this. Steve Rosenblum and Mark Grody with you. And right now we go to the Score Hotline. Score's Hotline is presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. And we welcome from Marquee, Tony Andracchi, talking about the Cubs. Tony, thanks for joining us.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
So you started writing this month trying to make the point that the Cubs, well, they went, you know, they got through June, they had a bad time, they made two trips to the West Coast, they were facing really good teams, the Brewers weren't, the Cubs now get to feast on crap, and oops. So, as Jed Hoyer said, life comes at you fast. So, what did you make of what the Cubs president and general manager said, both finally admitting something but saying it's not a rebuild? So I don't get it. Can you explain to me what that means?
Yeah, so I, it definitely was different this time around. You know, when Jed talked a couple of days ago, it was his demeanor, his mood, his, you know, tone. It was completely different than when we talked to him in Cincinnati, right about halfway through that losing streak, going into the holiday weekend last week. So, in, you know, back then in Cincinnati, he was talking about how they could go either way and kind of trying to figure out how to divide up the front office and scouting resources to determine whether they could buy or sell at the deadline. And as we know, the Cubs lost five more games after that, and things have changed quite a bit. And now Jed is talking, you know, leaning a lot more heavily on keeping that one eye on the future. So, you know, I think the whole term of rebuild is subjective. It's a matter of how people define that. I mean, if the Cubs do sell off, which, again, it certainly looks like that's probably the path they're going down, they could still kind of retool a la the 2016 Yankees or what the Red Sox have done and get back into things like next year or the year after. But I think that would be kind of the plan. The ideal scenario here is maybe some of these guys are traded away. Some others are stick around and are locked up to extensions, and then the Cubs, you know, go for it in free agency and look to try to add in a division that doesn't necessarily have a powerhouse over the next few years. You know, maybe they make a run at the NL Central again next year. So I think that's probably like the best case scenario and the plan that the Cubs and Jed's front office want to go with.
Are they afraid that the fan base wouldn't put up with what they did in 2012, 13, and 14?
I think that, yeah, maybe. I think that's fair. I mean, Jed was asked about, you know, the difficult decisions he has to make and if he alienates people. And as you said, you know, he just has to focus on the decisions that are the best for the franchise. So that's definitely a possibility, is, you know, worrying about the fan base and what they think about it. But I don't think the Cubs need that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think they need to go through. They were just in such a different place in 2011 and 12 when Theo and Jed first came over, and they were so far away from contending, where now obviously they still have pieces. If they trade them away, they still would have some pieces that they could build around it. And, you know, again, with free agency, and it should be a pretty big, you know, free agent market this winter, they could add and get back into things pretty quickly. So, yeah, I don't think they're looking to go through, you know, a stacking like 100 lost seasons back to back to back or something like that, or approaching that. So, no, I don't think they're going the route of 2011, 12, 13, 14 Cubs. I think it'll be more of, you know, like we said, this kind of reset, or just like trying to get back into things and restock the farm system and look toward the future a bit more, but then, you know, potentially come back at it again next year.
Our guest is Tony Andracki of Marquee. He writes about the Cubs for the website. I keep going back to what Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer said about them. Doesn't matter whether you lose 100 games or 90, you still need to, essentially they said, you still need to bottom out. You need the highest draft pick you can get. You need the most you can get for your players. And it really doesn't matter if you're not going to get into the playoffs, then it doesn't matter. You need to. You might as well lose a bunch more games and figure out what you have. And while saying it's not a rebuild, it sounds cynical. I heard Jed's voice, and he sounded supremely hurt. I mean, there was an honesty, a sincerity about, like, this the whole thing. He was the scenario he was looking at, but I don't quite buy that it's not a rebuild. I think this is a cynical business thing, because Marquee, your employer needs to, the Cubs need to be interesting and good to sell subscriptions. They need people to, they need eyeballs on that. You can say it's not a rebuild, and I could argue, well, if you don't rebuild, then you're serving up the same old crap, and you're a third place team maybe. So I don't understand, with the Ricketts, with Tom Ricketts claiming biblical losses and sounding poverty stricken, and who knows, we may see him at the Addison off ramp or the Kennedy with a tin cup. How are they going to spend money in free agency? What gives you the indication they would do that if it's not a rebuild and that's the other way to go? What are the indications that they would do that?
I mean, I guess we'll see. We're about to find out in a few months. But, I mean, the indication is, like, their payroll has it kind of bottoms out after this. Like, there are not a lot of long-term contracts. We know more than half the roster, about half the roster, is their contracts expire at the end of the year. So whether these guys are traded or retained and sign extensions or not, I mean, as of right now, there are a ton of open spots on the 2022 roster, and there are a ton of open spots on the payroll as well. So, I mean, like, logistically speaking, they're going to have to go to free agency to sign some of these guys and fill out the roster and figure it out. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen anything from them that says that they're not going to, that the fans are back to 100% here. And I don't know that the Cubs were projecting that right away to have happen in, you know, more than halfway through their, less than halfway through the season, I should say, to start in June here. So, yeah, I mean, I think there are definite positive signs after the pandemic and moving forward, but ultimately we'll see. We'll see what happens this winter, and we'll see what route the front office goes.
Tony, Kyle Hendricks, you know, he's cooking again. He looked terrific yesterday over, you know, his 6 1/3, 11-4 with a 3.77 ERA. I read a stat that he has 13 quality starts, which is third in Major League Baseball this year. Is he like the one guy you look at as a non-tradable piece, or is it the opposite where you might be able to get a ton for somebody like Hendricks?
Yeah, I mean, you might be able to get a ton, especially on this market right now. There aren't a ton of valuable starters out there that could be available in trades. And I think pretty much every team, every contending team would take a guy like that, take a guy like Hendricks, who, I mean, he's thrown six innings every start for like 2.5 months. Like, that is consistent. That puts your team in a position to try to win the game every night out. So obviously, yeah, that's an enormous value. The fact that yeah, he is signed for a pretty affordable team contract for the next three years here is certainly a feather in the cap of, like, if the Cubs do try to do this kind of soft reset and contend next year or the year after, Hendricks is a huge part of that. He's still only 31 years old, and just the way he pitches and how intelligent he is, and doesn't need to rely on this immense stuff, he certainly could be could age pretty well and you know, still be effective well into his like mid to late 30s here. So yeah, I think for a team to pry him away from the Cubs right now with his contract, I think it would have to take a huge haul, like, you know, a haul bigger than Darvish. I don't know how it would be anything less than that for the Cubs to get rid of Hendricks at this point. But yeah, I mean, again, I guess we'll see. I don't know exactly what Jed is getting in terms of what other teams are offering, whether it's for Hendricks or Wilson Contreras, who's also under contract for next year, or other guys like Kimbrel or Bryant or Tapera or Chafin or so on, who are set to become free agents after this year. So it would be, to me, I think it would take a lot for the Cubs to trade Kyle Hendricks. I don't see that happening, but then again, maybe some team gives him like an incredible haul, and it's something that Jed can't say no to.
Tony Andracki is our guest. He covers the Cubs for Marquee, where you can watch the Cubs play baseball, and they beat the Cardinals. They will be playing Los Cardinales again. Zach Davies goes today, the representative of the Darvish trade against Kwang Young Kim for the Cardinals. He's hit three batters. I always look up every pitcher the Cubs face. I look to see how many pitchers, how many batters they've hit, because I fear for Anthony Rizzo. I don't want him to get hurt before they might trade him. And Derek Gould of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch calls Rizzo notorious HBP. Which I think is just a great line. So
he accepts it, though. The Rizzo just takes. He's like, "That's cool. I know. I'm right over the plate. I get it."
Yeah, that's it. So is he? I think in talking about Tony, let me know what you feel about Anthony Rizzo in talking about him. Different from all of the other World Series heroes, he seems like a throwback Beanie Baby kind of Cub of don't. We can't lose this guy because don't you know who he is, kind of thing. Whatever he's doing to help you win or not win, or wherever he's gotten you, and however more injured he becomes or more days off he takes, it seems to me there's a weird not a weird halo, but there's something about him. There's an asterisk there. Because don't you know he's Disco Tony Rizzo? He's a guy you can't deal. I think there's something different about him because this is old school Cubs. Before they won, before they were expected to be contend every year, this is what it feels like to me. Does it feel like that to you? You're closer to it.
Yeah, I'd say that. I wouldn't say go as far as to say they can't deal him, but I think I do agree with you that there would be it'd be a much more difficult personal decision to make than a business decision. You know, if it was just about business, then yeah, you know, maybe they would get a pretty decent haul for him. I don't know, you know, exactly what other contenders are looking at in terms of, you know, potential first baseman and left-handed hitters into their lineup. I imagine a guy like Rizzo and his track record, a lot of teams would like that in their lineup and in the field. But you're right, there is a lot more of the personal aspect and of, you know, this is going to alienate the fans maybe a bit more than a Bryant or Javi, just because he's been here longer. He's been out there as the face of the franchise for, you know, what, I guess almost a decade now, since 2012, really. And yeah, definitely more than a Kimbrel or than a Zach Davies or, you know, an Andrew Chafin, guys who, you know, fans have certainly rallied around this year or over the last couple of years, but they're not Anthony Rizzo. They're not, you know, the guy that has a ward named after him at Lurie's Children's Hospital. Like, they're not the guy that, you know, everybody talks about, again, as the face of the franchise and as one of the guys that brought that World Series championship in 2016. So there's definitely, you know, that added element with him in particular that would be difficult to trade. And it's difficult because another team is not going to come and be like, oh, well, we know how important Anthony Rizzo is to the fan base and to the city, so we're going to pay extra for it. That doesn't work that way, you know. So I think, you know, that's definitely something Jed's going to have to weigh. And to be honest, I'm glad I'm not Jed trying to make those decisions, because I don't know where you draw the line and say, hey, this is what the value is worth it to give up a guy that the fans can rally behind. And like you said, I mean, you know, fans just got back. The Cubs do want to still sell a product out there that they want fans to come to, and they want Wrigley Field to still, you know, try to be a destination, even if they do sell off some players. And Rizzo is a huge part of that. Javi's a huge part of that, the way fans get behind him. You know, Chris Bryant is too. So, and these guys, obviously, they helped bring that World Series championship. Like, regardless of what happens from here, extensions or not, trades or not, these guys are just going to be a huge part of Cubs lore forever. And there is a human element to that. I mean, Jed has seen Anthony Rizzo from three different stops now, Boston to San Diego to here. It would definitely take a lot more personally to trade him. And that would have to be a tough decision either way.
Tony, one other part to this going, I guess, this year and going forward is the National League Central and what Milwaukee is doing with, you know, good starting pitching and Corbin Burnes and Brandon Woodruff, obviously. And then the Reds, you know, they're four games over 500. My question is it real what those two teams are doing? And should Milwaukee be looked upon as the team to beat in future years?
I think the short answer is yes to both. I don't know how, like you just said, with three pitchers, with Freddie Peralta and yeah. Brandon Woodruff, you know, Peralta just took Woodruff's spot in the All-Star game, and then Corbin Burnes was just off to a historic start to this season. I forget how many, I think, what do you have, like 42 strikeouts or something before he even walked a batter this year. And so, like, those three guys, when you have starting rotation with those three, that's just incredible, and that's an awesome foundation. And then you have Christian Yelich signed for a few years as well to kind of augment the offense. Like, yeah, that's a pretty good team. I would say that they're, you know, probably the team to beat. I thought the Cardinals might be the team this year that would be, you know, I thought Brewers, Cubs, Cardinals would all kind of be up there, and whichever team got kind of the biggest breaks, it would go their way. But I didn't see the Brewers pitching really coming to this level, and I thought the Cardinals would be a bit higher up after getting Arenado. So, you know, the Cardinals have surprised me a bit. They talk about starting pitching. They've had issues with that all year, just mostly in terms of health. So, and yeah, what the Reds are doing is certainly legit. Castellanos and Winker and Votto's coming back here. So, like, their offense is pretty good, and the Cubs can attest to it. Like, their pitching staff is I think underrated, especially when Sonny Gray is, if he's able to like get back healthy and fully get going. So those two teams are definitely good. I think, you know, what they do in the offseason and how, if the Reds are able to like retain Castellanos, who I think has an opt out at the end of the year, and stuff like that, I think will determine how the division moves forward. But when you have the three-headed attack of those guys in the Brewers rotation, I think they're the team to beat until proven otherwise.
Our guest is Tony Andracki of Marquee, covers the Cubs for the network. We're talking Cubs here on The Score. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Rohde with you. The Cardinals have been in a big-time nosedive because Jack Flaherty got hurt, which we've seen we know the emphasis on pitching, we know the importance of pitching, we know what it means, and that was, you know, drafting and developing. So we saw Alzolay get just exposed. As soon as you put up an all left-handed lineup against them, they're just that, which Joe Girardi did, and they smacked him around. So if this is this the best Cubs pitching prospect, the guy who can only pitch to right-handed batters? What else do they have if they're not going to call it a rebuild and they need arms and they've got a history of not producing them, or if they produce one, they trade it to the White Sox? Examine the Cubs system for pitching that you can have hope in.
I think a lot of that lies in Alzolay's ability to make adjustments, and in the other two guys, the two rookies that we've seen this year, and Keegan Thompson and Justin Steele. They currently are stretching out Steele in the minor leagues, and they're going to give him a spot in the rotation to, I don't know exactly how far they're going to stretch him out. I don't know that he's going to be a guy like Hendricks that's going to go six innings every time out. He's had some injuries in the past, including Tommy John in 2017. So, you know, especially after no minor league season, he's not going to have a full workload. But the Cubs are definitely going to give him a chance to get back to his starting roots and let him face a lineup a couple times over. And, yeah, if things continue to go the way we're all talking about and the Cubs do sell later this month, then maybe Keegan Thompson goes down the same path. And, you know, you got 25, 26-year-old pitchers here who have proven the ability that their stuff plays in the big leagues. They can get big league hitters out. The moment's not too big for them. Maybe they can have success as starters as well. And then Alzolay, he does struggle against lefties. That's out there, and it's obvious. And, you know, the OPS against him and the numbers and everything is out there as well. But he's also making some adjustments. He's been working in a cutter, which is new and kind of a variation of his slider that he is hoping to have better success against lefties with, and trying to make different adjustments, because a lot of it has been kind of a two-seam sinker and slider mix, and, you know, just lefties have kind of picked up on it, and he's obviously given up a few homers to left-handed hitters. So his ability to make adjustments, just like any other pitcher, you know, guys coming up and figuring things out and adjusting to the league and how the league adjusts back to them. So I think that's where, you know, like the main hope lies in terms of starting pitching. But relief, there's a lot of interesting guys coming up. We saw Brad Wick he hasn't given up a run this year before he just went on the IL with a heart thing here. And the Cubs have been able to develop some relief prospects. Tommy Nance came up earlier. Trevor McGill is hitting 100. Manny Rodriguez is still on the 40-man, and then Ben Leeper is just doing some amazing things in the minor leagues right now. And
what about the other Wick, Tony? Brad Wick has looked very good, but what about the Rowan Wick?
Yeah, well, he's another guy that, you know, is a feather in the cap in terms of they've been able to develop, but he's still dealing with that oblique side injury that he suffered in early September. So we're talking almost a year here.
Yeah.
And he's still trying to get back on track. I think at this point, I doubt he pitches this year. He was just throwing off flat ground and not even getting off a bullpen when we last had an update, maybe about 10 days ago or 2 weeks ago. So even in a best case scenario, he would be back maybe for like the final month of the season. So, but yeah, he's still only, I think, like 28. So he has some years left in him, but it's a weird injury. You don't expect for a pitcher an oblique in their left side to be so troublesome for a year. So they're certainly trying to figure it out. I don't think they have any like clear answers on why this has stuck around for so long.
Tony, thanks for your time. We appreciate you joining us. And things can only get more interesting or more curiouser and curiouser. Thanks.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Tony Andracchia of Marquee, talking Cubs. Mark, last night, Dallas Keuchel pitched, and then he pitched some truths. So if Dallas Keuchel's talking, we should be listening. And we're going to do that next in Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Welcome in, welcome back. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Grody, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. It's Saturday Suckage. And the White Sox got seven innings, a one-run ball from Dallas Keuchel, then they got some truths out of them. So, Mark, I found several things that this man said interesting because... remember last year, he was the wake-up call? He was the human wake-up call? Some guys are doing what it takes to win. Some guys are going through the motions.
That's right. He said that leadership moment. I call it a leadership moment, yeah.
And you're right. And everything changed after that. They were, 8-19? Some kind of bad news. And then they became the first team to clinch playoff spot. And then they became the first team to just lay back and get all full of themselves. But he was talking about what's coming up for this team with a division lead and suffering, getting through injuries, getting good pitching. And I thought this was a thing that we needed to bring to the air from Dallas Keuchel.
For lack of better terms, we got our butts whooped in Houston. So I'd like to see kind of what we're made of just to open the second half, because our August schedule is pretty daunting ahead of us. But I think we're gonna play Houston a whole lot better, or at least I would hope so, than what we did in Houston. So that's going to be the first big test, and I'd like to see where we're at there before I really comment on where I think we're at or we're headed.
There's a guy, that's Dallas Keuchel, last night. There's a guy who said, okay, we're beating the teams we should. We should beat Baltimore by a couple touchdowns. This is what we do, and... by the way, there are teams with better records, and Houston was one that just beat us up. So you hear that, and I thought, wow, that's okay. That's a guy that there's a sense of truth and presence and poise and not a whole lot of screaming about themselves in that clubhouse, that in that dressing room.
I think what he said was really good, but what I'm thinking about with Dallas Keuchel right now is that I want to see him get back to pitching the way he was last year. You know, he entered last night's game with an ERA near 450. He personally got smoked in Houston. I mean, you can talk about the entire team getting their butts kicked, but he was particularly butt-kicked in that game. And I know I'm probably being a little bit nitpicky and watching a little bit too closely, but, you know, Keuchel had to fight through that game even last night. And there were seven innings, one run, seven hits, gave up the homer to Ramon Urias. But he had to, you know, he was fighting through it. He was battling himself at times. So, you know, with Lucas Giolito struggling like he kind of has recently, like, you know, you're going to need some of these guys to get right. And they're all entitled to have a slump. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, this is what they have lived on. And I don't know if Aloy is coming back or not, or how effective he's going to be. But the Sox are going to have to continue to depend on their starting pitching. And it's kind of crazy to think that this year, right now, Lucas Giolito is having about the same season as Zach Davies of the Cubs. Like, they're very, very similar statistically and in effectiveness. So, and, I think it's Giolito. Is it Giolito? Yeah, Giolito going tonight for the Sox. So I'm very curious to see how that – hopefully it's a get-well game against just a horrible Baltimore team. My God. What's amazing is that Arizona is worse. If you're watching the White Sox in Baltimore and you see how bad the Orioles are tonight, if you're watching the game, just remember there's a team worse than the Baltimore Orioles.
Right, and they're Arizona. The Cubs get to play them, and the Diamondbacks changed the start time, first pitch of a Cubs game because they didn't want to play at night against the Suns in the NBA Finals for a potential game. I don't know, was it six or whatever it was, five? Whatever, they weren't going to allow it. They weren't going to go near that. Hi, we're playing at 1 o'clock. We'll try to get this thing over, and you can go watch the Suns. Please come out. There'll be three people at that game. Can you imagine if the Diamondbacks, as horrible as they are, schedule that game against the Cubs? Even with, I guess what they would have is Wrigley West. They would have, because Cub fans would buy. They don't care about the Suns.
Yeah,
that's it. They'd go by the. They might anyway.
Right. The last time the you know, if Cubs fans cared about the Suns, Dan Marley was playing for them. 93.
That's a true thing. That yeah. Right.
Cedric Ceballos.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
And I think that was Oliver Miller on that team.
Big Oliver Miller. Yes.
One of the great all-time heckled lines was, "Hey Miller, you're the two worst players on that team." And I think it was that year. And I can imagine Barkley breaking up. And that was the thing. That was when in 93 when Scottie Pippen's at the free throw line in that fourth quarter of game six and Barkley's trying to unnerve him walking by and going, "Hey, what are you doing for dinner Tuesday night? You wanna come to my house? Why don't you guys come to my house for dinner Tuesday night before game seven? You wanna do that?" And you know, they made the free throws and Paxton hit the shot and there you go. But
and now Pippen refers to Charles Barkley as a fake tough guy. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like I am really tired of him. But you're right about Lucas Giolito and maybe it's perfect. His ERA is 4.20. That's what this show needs.
Oh yes. It always comes back to and Zach Davies, 4.28.
Yeah. And they're both going
smoke
tonight.
Weed every day.
Thank you, Nate Dogg. So what's important is for Giolito tonight is to see where that spin rate, where his changeup is.
Mm-hmm.
What defy Josh Donaldson? Show us that Josh Donaldson was wrong, right? I mean, okay.
Yeah, I think he will, too. I think Giolito will. You know what I mean? Like, it might take a couple more starts, but we know what he already recovered from once. Being the worst pitcher in baseball, as the commercial obsessively tells us, to being one of the best. And now he has to, guess what? He's got to adjust again. And I think he has, he's proven to me he can. I think he will, but it's going to take some time, I think. Maybe tonight. And I mean, I think really, I mean, seriously, that is with Baltimore being as bad as they are, this is a time to get well. I mean, you know, last night was Gavin Sheets. Tonight it's Lucas Giolito.
And Tim Anderson's an all-star. Tim Anderson was named to the all-star team, and that's quite a thing. Before Tim Anderson struck out in the seventh last night, Chris Kamka, the Sultan of the Stat, tweeted out, "Tim Anderson's last 12 plate appearances, single, walk, walk, single, single, double, single, walk, strikeout, single, single, double." So, you know, an OBP of over 900, that'll get you on an all-star. That'll get you some attention.
That's I love the walks. Big. I love the fact that there's three walks in all of that.
Yep. There you go. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, everybody's got trade ideas. Everybody wants to make trades for the Cubs. We hear them all over the place. Everybody's going here and there. So let's talk about some of it. You got a trade? You want to make up a trade, Mark? Should we make?
I could probably come up with something during the break, yeah.
Well, you do that, and I got some ideas on that. So let's make a deal. I'm cool. Steve Rosenblum. He's Mark Grody. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly what people outside of Cleveland think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.